and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
Jake here.
And Josh Mayo.
And Sebastian isn't with us today, but he will be joining us back again next week. Now, we have some interesting news stories I've been developing. Well, I want to start off with some Canadian news, and myself and Josh were looking into the updates in the serial killings by Bruce MacArthur. Now, this past week, he was video conferenced in to his first court case and his court appearance. And I mean, these kind of, you know, court appearances, they're generally there to be like, hello, this is me. Mm-hmm. I am that person. Do you confirm you are that person? Yes, I confirm I am that person.
It's court procedures.
Thank you very much. And then you all go home. So there really wasn't anything that we were told about. There was a publication ban on the day. Mm-hmm. So even if there were any juicy details, we wouldn't be able to tell you, even if we did know. So that's kind of where that's at. Although they are expecting to charge him with more murders soon. So, and just to recap for our listeners, as far as we're aware, at time of recording, he was charged with, I think, six.
Well, because they found the bodies.
No, he was charged with four. Four, they found one of the bodies.
Right.
And they found six bodies, and there's more bodies of which they haven't revealed the identity, nor have they charged him with additional.
Right. Okay, murders. I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think at this point we know that he's a serial killer. We know that there's more than all of the victims, the bodies that we have found. So, you know, the numbers of charges going to increase as long as we keep finding more evidence. It's just kind of worrying that, you know, so far there's only been six found. But I think there must be more.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, the police are obviously investigating this. But the media has been quite actively investigating the police and their handling of this situation. And what we've discovered from the Toronto Star is that apparently someone had, who was friends with one of the gentlemen who had disappeared in 2012, reported that Bruce MacArthur was the last person seen with them. Mm-hmm. Both of them were landscapers, and both of them were gay, and it was the last person seen with them. And the Toronto police have not been able to confirm that that report was made to them. But it's not looking good. And this goes back to the idea of the community has for a long time been saying, there's a crazy serial killer, and the police haven't been doing anything about it.
I mean, it's kind of a redo this year, and this occasion in particular, it's kind of redo for them, isn't it? Like, people have been telling them that there is something out there, and they did not look into it, and now that we prove that there is, they have to do something about it. And obviously people are looking into how they are looking out for it, because, you know, over the years, you know, it's water coming out of this year. It's kind of, sorry, water, I don't know why I said that. Water pouring on a duck's head, that used to be like the idiom we had once when I was in Vietnam. It's like, no matter how you tell a person, it's the same unless they acknowledge your problem. And even after, like, they acknowledge the problem, you still have to see how they deal with it. And right now, Toronto police is dealing with it the way anyone would expect them to deal with it. But I'm still expecting like an apology or some way to address how they have not been addressing this over the years. Because, like, hey, finding six bodies is fine. But not finding six bodies over the course of a decade and people have been telling you about it, that's a problem.
Well, these are six bodies, and of course, let's not lose sight of the fact that these are six people who they found. And they're not all of the people that they know he's killed. Like, there's three other people they haven't found the remains of. So it's
I'm not taking the spotlight from the victims. I'm just saying that maybe we should shine a little more spotlight on how, well, like you said, social media has been hunting out and looking out for how the police deal with this situation, but no one ever addressed of how they have not addressed the fact that they did not deal with it until now.
Well, they've made the sort of placid statements of, you know, there are things that we need to learn how to not do badly next time, and kind of the, you know, we will identify if mistakes have been made, and, you know, platitudes like that. And I believe the Toronto Police have launched a review of how it investigates missing persons cases. So we can only hope. But as Sebastian said last week, that we are now seeing with the police service, not just in Toronto, but also in Vancouver and Montreal, they're starting to look at all of their cold cases of gay men who have gone missing over time and try to see whether or not they've identified any patterns. And it's this lack of a pattern spotting that may be the issue here.
Is it for the, so the Toronto Police are doing a review, and that's good to hear, but is it like an internal review? Can the community has any say in it or review it? In terms of how the processes go through, because, you know, the community is the stakeholder in this situation, and if we report that there's a serial killer out and loose, and if we are studying on the pattern, then we, like, the community should be the one who has a say in it, not just the police and their review, because, you know, what have their review done for the last decade for gay people?
It is an internal review, and I think that's really a lot of the questions that the people in Toronto are asking themselves, and it's spilling over to other communities. You know, people are looking at police investigations and really wondering, are they really paying attention? Are they just clocking in or clocking out? Like, you know, is the effort being put in there? Because the effort was not put in to any of the missing person cases to the degree that was necessary. I'm not saying no effort was put in, but not enough effort was put in, and which is why a serial killer went unchecked for, we can presume, at least over a decade. You know, and that's a long time for a madman to be up there murdering. Yeah, exactly. So, and the whole time making people feel very much unsafe and be very much unsafe. Now, we're going to move on to what should be much lighter news. But for regular listeners of this show, I struggle to find good news. Like, there aren't that many nice stories of things happening in the world of LGBT rights. Now, one of the things that was kind of sweet was that Tom Daley and his Canadian partner, Dustin Lance Black, I think he's the Canadian producer. Pretty sure he's Canadian.
Yeah.
They're going to raise a child, which is adorable. They announced it on Valentine's Day, and I believe it's a surrogacy route, I think, they're taking.
I have read this article this morning, actually. It's pretty interesting. Congrats to them, though, having a child. It's kind of good that we can be as public about having, like, you know, a gay couple having a child in America. Because I don't remember back in the days when I first moved to Canada, it was 4 or 5 years ago, that was Obama time, I suppose. And even then, like, a gay couple having a child is not the news that people would be like, oh, let's congratulate them or post them on Facebook or post it on the news. You know, small blessing, but anyway.
I think they're based out of London, though, in the UK.
Oh.
Because, of course, Tom Daley is a British athlete. He was a Olympic diver. That really was how he shot to fame. He was kind of Britain's sweetheart for the London Olympics. He was kind of, everyone was pinning their hopes on Tom Daley. Actually, my favorite part about the Olympics was all of the swimming and the diving and the synchronized diving and all of that jazz.
You watch every sport that has men in speedos. Let's just say that.
No.
You just name all the sports that had men in speedos.
What's really funny is that somebody noticed that, you know, on news stations, they have little titles and banner titles along the bottom with, like, breaking news stories. Yeah. Well, the camera was on the swimmers, like, diving, then getting out and walking over to the shower to rinse off, still in their bathing suits. Because of the breaking news banner, it looked like everybody was naked as he was
censored.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And he was like the CBC, BBC, ABC, MSNBC. They all had done it inadvertently by creating this.
I think it's kind of interesting because I remember that if you Google or YouTube it right now, you can probably find those videos because the person whose filming it live would not see the banner.
No.
And the banner is put there by a computer algorithm. So
as it's far just as a skin
you can't,
over top.
Yeah, so you can't really predict where it's gonna go. Because if you fit a swimmer's body inside a frame, a picture, you would have to have his lower part, body part, at exactly where the banner is. So every shot of a swimmer would have to be at that exact position.
The reason why I bring it up and why it's not the greatest news story is that the Daily Mail, now the Daily Mail for our Canadian listeners, actually has one of the highest online readerships of any media source. So the Daily Mail is a right-of-center paper. It's a tabloid paper in the UK, but their online website and their Daily Mail US version took the market by storm.
Funny enough, my dad, who works in Vietnam as a journalist, and he pointed out that even though he doesn't know English that well, all of the newspaper, all the I guess credible ones people know of, it usually has the word daily on it attached to like a specific town or geographical name. For example, we went to Niagara Falls, and I think my dad saw something like a newsletter with Daily Niagara Falls Daily or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the other papers like Ottawa Daily or Ottawa Citizen, like a combination of letters gave them credibility. But then he reads it and he asked me to read it. I was like, Dad, this is poor tabloids. It's like, you know, when Meghan Markle is gonna wear the next dress to like the Prince Harry, I don't know, whatever. I was like, this is not a credible news source. And he was like, well, why did it make it look so credible? It's sort of like a fake news sort of thing, but it's not.
Well, it's to sell ads, and it's to push copies and so on.
But most of them are very infactual, and it's not exactly journalism. It's more, like you said, tabloid. But then how do you distinguish tabloids from journalism nowadays, really?
Actually, I have a question for our listeners here. We are looking into the potential of starting up a Canadian LGBT news outlet. And the way we would do it is that people would subscribe for a digital newspaper or newsletter, and the subscription money we would use to pay on-the-ground journalists across Canada. So we can actually get Canadian news, hopefully nice, happy news. That would be lovely. I would love to have some good news. It would help me sleep at night. So that's my goal, is good news.
I mean, also, I think that's a great idea. Luca told me about it. But, you know, just imagine having your own little newspaper based on, you know, your own community, Canada, based on Canadian news, and not having to hear about, you know, depressing news or like having to hear about fake news. So I think this is a good idea.
I mean, the biggest challenge is that Canada is served by Daily Extra. Now, Daily Extra did have, see, they've got the word daily in it, did have, you know, print paper editions in, I think it was at 6 cities at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went digital, then it went digital only. And now you would struggle to find even digital stories for many cities, including Ottawa. So the nation's capital has no dedicated LGBT reporters, even though, you know, last week we were talking about, you know, Canadian aid money going to Indonesia, and we'll get to that later in the show. But there are big Canadian stories and Canadian interest stories that relate and correlate what's going to happen there.
There are tons of things in terms of LGBTQ community that should be and have to be, you know, broadcasted as news out there, because, you know, there's a lot of programs, there's a lot of organizations and news and legislation that involve, you know, not only LGBTQ people, but, you know, their families, their friends, you know, the workplace you work for, your college, your university. So having this newsletter and having the Canadian journalists writing about Canadian news that you care about, which is, I think it would be a great, valuable outlet that is sort of far surpassed, you know, Daily Extra used to be.
And Daily Extra relies on advertising. And I think that's part of the trouble here is, you know, how are we going to be able to support people hearing about stories that matter to them, hearing the stories about the people who are important to them, people who are close to them. You know, there was a story in Cape Breton of the candidate for the Provincial Conservative Party who was forced to come out. And, you know, I don't think Extra had anybody there. We don't have anyone there to report on it. So a lot of those interests go unsaid. There's a reason why that was happening, but who's there to do a bit of digging? Who's there to get to the real story underneath? And right now the answer is nobody. Is that something that you would be willing to pay for, Josh? You know, would you be willing to pay $5, $6, $7 a month to have somebody in Cape Breton able to go do that digging?
Definitely. As you pointed out earlier, I think one of the problems with finding not only LGBT-centric news, but more specifically Canadian news on Canadian issues, is that we get a lot of our news sources from
non-American
places that don't focus on stories that are relevant to us. And I think having a publication that puts our stories at the fore or on focus, I think, yeah, something worth paying for.
Anyways, let us know, what do you think? Should we create a Canadian news network that's sort of subscription-based? Is that something that you would pay for? Let us know. You can tweet us at Talk Can Queer or find us on Facebook and at Talk Can Queer. Now, I'm just going to wrap up this story on the Daily Mail. Now, the reason why I wanted to note it is that a columnist for the Daily Mail called Richard Littlejohn wrote an op-ed really decrying about how, and it was one of the core arguments was that by using the surrogacy, Tom Daley and Lance Black were using women for their own ends, like a product, and it was kind of very, the tone was very like, you know, what'll happen next? You know, these poor women are being used by gay men just for their bodies, and it's just, it's ridiculous, because of course gay men using surrogacy is a tiny fraction of the surrogacy market, where it's a lot of straight couples, but for one reason or another they're unable to carry children to term, and you know, but so it was a disgrace, and it was a major homophobic attack on both Tom Daley and Lance Black. Tons of advertisers have actually dumped the Daily Mail. They're like, this isn't the kind of product that I want to be selling things next to. So I think currently it is, there's a bank, Suzuki Cars, Honda, the Co-op, which is a big grocery chain, Boots, which is Rexall Pharmacy, Carpet Right, I mean, it's a carpet store, Iceland, which is another grocery chain, and Morrison's, which is another grocery chain. So these are big companies pulling their ads off of the of the paper.
I just noticed something. Electronic Arts also did the same thing. And if any of our audience or you guys here know Electronic Arts, it's the same company that created The Sims. And they created it, I believe they created from The Sims 3 that you can have a same-sex couple and have a baby. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. But anyway, actually a question for you. Did you guys know that surrogacy, paid surrogacy, is actually illegal in Canada? You can have a willing surrogate, but you cannot pay someone to be your surrogate because, you know, obvious concerns. But if you think about it, I think, okay, I have read this article this morning when I woke up, saw the link. I don't know, you read it?
I did.
Have you read his column?
I did not read the column.
I briefed through it, and he had a disclaimer, sort of a disclaimer at the beginning, where he said, I'm okay with gay couples, sort of. Like, he generally said, like, I'm okay with gay couples.
I'm not racist, I have a black friend.
Yes, exactly, along that line. He basically said that he's okay with gay couple, and he thinks that children are better off with gay children are better with gay couple a single parent or something.
Oh, right.
But it is best if... he basically saying that, you know, a gay couple is still better than a single parent, but it's best if, you know, it's a man and a woman. And I was sitting here thinking to myself, like, first of all, he's saying that he's not against gay men. He's saying that he's okay that gay men can get married. He's saying that he has no problem with straight people, I'm assuming, or surrogacy. He never mentioned surrogacy within straight people being, like, anything cautions or... So, at the end of the day, the only thing you have problem with is they're gay, surrogacy, and they're comparing it marginally better than single parents. So isn't he kind of denouncing straight people in the sense that straight people are only good if they stay together and have a child?
His argument kind of hinges on the idea that in order for a child to succeed, it has to have a man and a woman. And if there's no woman or no man, it's like, oh, God help. But the idea of there being two men raising the child is where he's really getting... And there's a great line, which is what you mentioned. And he goes, you know, I supported civil partnerships long before it was fashionable, and I'd rather children were fostered by loving gay couples than condemned to rot in same state-run institutions where they have a better chance of being abused. And then he goes on to say, despite all that, which for me is like essentially saying, I don't mean to be rude, mm-hmm. but, you know, and that's essentially how I'm reading that sentence.
That's exactly what I was referring to. Despite the fact that countless single parents do a fantastic job, I still cling to the belief that the children benefit most from being brought up by a man and a woman. Okay, so first of all, he basically denounced single parents, and then he said, despite the fantastic job they're doing, I still think they benefit most from being brought by a man and a woman. And the whole, his article, if you look at the picture, is a giant quotation he had. Please don't pretend two dads is a new normal. Now, my problem with it, he said, I would rather being were fostered by a loving gay couple than condemned in a state-run institution. And he said, civil partnership before long was fashionable. The word fashionable, like every single word in that sentence was made so that it sounds like he had a choice and he chosen to believe that gay couple is okay, but he still hold on to the belief, like his minimal belief that children, it's like he's trivializing every single sentence just so that he make his point matters.
For me, the issue kind of goes down to that sort of the pedophile panic around gay men and children. And it's the idea that if there's two men doing their own thing over there behind closed doors and I don't have to think about it, whatever. And maybe he's got a libertarian approach where it's like, if they're doing their own thing and they want to be taxed just like a heterosexual couple, they want to pay taxes like a heterosexual couple and all of that state stuff, whatever, that's cool. But children, oh, we can't possibly trust children alone with gay men. Heaven forbid the thought that they have no female guidance in their life, you know. And it's for me, it really speaks to the gay panic and the pedophile fear that really has haunted the gay community for many years. And it's this idea that, you know, that they would not be a sufficient couple.
I don't know. I agree with all you said, but I also wanted to add that even though it sounds like he's reasonable, the word choice he chosen, it makes it sound perfectly align with, I'm not a racist, but I have black friends. I'm not yes. homophobic, but I have a gay friend. Like that, it's kind of like borderline, like, you know, please don't pretend two dads is normal. But, you know, two dads is still better than an orphanage.
I mean, technically speaking, he is right. Because the normal environment, the typical, the average, the 9 times out of 10 scenario is not two dads.
Mm-hmm.
So that is abnormal, that is out of the ordinary, that is queer,
mm-hmm.
because that's exactly what that is. It's out of the average.
Yes, it's abnormal, but it is what we're trying to normalize. It's
mm-hmm.
what we're trying to like make it so that we have a normalcy in our lives. When, you know, you see a happy child holding, you know, two gay dads' hands and you're walking down the street. But this guy is making it, don't pretend two dads is normal. Now, we're trying to make that, and he's trying to go the exact opposite by saying, you know, there is this problem, so, you know, don't ignore it. And I'm not saying that he's bad, only refreshing the issue around children. And children is being used as a propaganda against LGBT people.
On this theme of being infuriated with a word choice, to hide behind the, you know, the statement that two dads is not the new normal, but really, instead of, you're not really questioning the normalcy of the relationship, you're questioning the legitimacy of you know, two dads being capable parents. Using that, you know, it's a bit of a straw man fallacy, tactic, and it's infuriating. I can see why Jake is angry about this.
Well, because I I actually read it. Like, the more I read it, and being, you know, a gay, an Asian gay man from actual Asia, you know, it's just like, I saw my mom and how my dad interact with my mom, and we live in a very hierarchical, sexist society, and it's infuriating when you say that, you know, two men cannot make a great dad, or two women cannot make a great mom, or like, it's kind of like this idea that you have to be a mom and a dad, a couple, to make it normal and to make it fine, which I think it's just ridiculous. I mean, yes, it is best that the child get the birth, you know, parents, man and a woman, but, you know, not at the end of the day, that's, and sometimes it is not the situation. So how do you deal with that? Do you just call it out that the kid have two dads? That's not normal. No, you don't call it out. You acknowledge that it's not normal, and then normalize it. Mm-hmm. If you do accept that, you know, gay people, LGBTQ community is a part of society, you have to accept that this is new, and this is the abnormal is a new normal.
But then you have to look at what he may be meaning by normal here in terms of accepted. It's the new standard model, or it's a new you know, thing that's and I think accepted really is the best word here. And which kids, if you flip that word out, you know, let's not pretend two gay dads is accepted. That puts a whole more clear view on it. Because for me, normally you're like, yeah, no, that is kind of out of the ordinary. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying that it's not acceptable.
As we've seen over the years, it's this trick of using, you know, slightly different words and trying to legitimize your, you know, these backwards arguments with phrases like,
it's
there are ways to get other people to be convinced that you're a reasonable person, you're arguing for something reasonable, when clearly, you know, you're just hiding behind a veil of...
It is a disgrace, and I think that I'm so glad to see that long list of advertisers pull their money and say, you know what, that's unacceptable. Now, we're going to jump to a song by Cardi B, and it is Premonition. And it is from her brand new album. Very exciting to see what else Claude Barrett brings forward. And we'll be back just after this. Je comptais tes peurs dans le temps ce qui sépare l'espace de tes choix. Je n'étais pas seule. Et les fleurs, tu les comptes sur le bout de tes doigts qui défient noirceur et supplice. Mais moi je suis attirée par le vice. On s'assemble ensemble, mes petits m'attendent. Et quand le jour se lève, je reviens vers toi. Ce que je reconnais, ce n'est que vie dans moi. D'abus je vis d'erreur, tes mots comme une loi. Comme une prémonition, on ne changera pas. On ne changera pas. Nos cris font tomber et les murs d'une vie qu'on se plaît à pousser. Les limites des corps, ceux qui partagent nos ébats, nos pensées. On s'éprend de douleur, mais on est attiré par notre malheur. On détruit ensemble, mes petits m'attendre. Et quand le jour se lève, je reviens vers toi. Ce que je reconnais, ce n'est que vie dans moi. D'abus je vis d'erreur, tes mots comme une loi. Comme une prémonition, on ne changera pas. Hello and welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. I'm still Luke Smith.
I'm still Jake.
And this is Josh Mayo.
Right, so we're going to jump on to the next news story. Now, me and Jake watched Queer Eye for Straight Guy on Netflix. Now, I went into it thinking, okay, is this going to be another Will and Grace? I watched the new Will and Grace season, and some of the jokes were like, ha, that's funny. And some of them, and it was like, oh, yeah, you know, this is just another Will and Grace show. Do we need more Will and Grace? And I wasn't really excited. And a part of me dies a little when they just take a show from the 90s and bring it back. I'm like, to try something new, come up with a new idea, do something innovative instead of this literally the same shows. So I went into Queer Eye with a bit of a, is it going to be, what's it going to be? It has the guy from Game of Thrones on it, and I think he's hilarious on Game of Thrones. Turns out that him on Game of Thrones is only a fraction of how hilarious he actually is. It's Jonathan Van Ness. There we go. Anthony Porowski is who I think is the most just breathtakingly handsome. And he's not like, you know, rugby player or football player. Not like Tom Cruise level handsome.
He's kind of like
but
the...
he's like...
it's like the Zac Efron boy next door type.
Yeah,
everyday casual sort of
type of guy you would have to crush on.
You could bump into him in the street level of handsome. Yeah,
yeah, like you could bump him in the street on his way home from basketball. And you, if I would see him on the street, I would just sploosh.
A lot of people have been very much enjoying Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, mainly for Anthony and his appearances on the show. He is charming. He is... just intel. I mean, he's great. He's like, if you were to design the perfect OkCupid profile, it would be this guy. So there's that.
I don't know if you noticed, but he...
I'm kind of crushing a little bit. So if you're listening, Anthony, or somebody knows that, because he's Canadian as well, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
So, yeah, there was an episode where they were stopped by a cop because it was a cop getting the makeover. Anthony was like, oh my god, I thought they were going to take me back to Canada. We both watched it, and I think what we found was the show was able to look at current concerns and issues. It's effectively a makeover show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But they make over the whole thing. So they do your hair, they do your house, they do your personality to a degree, they build your confidence, and they take everything about you from all facets, like the whole picture, and they have people working on all bits of it. And it's a great show. It's very entertaining. It's five gay guys, and some of them are very gay guys. It's a great show.
I actually find the show quite fascinating because it's putting five, six people, very different people together, and everything turns out good because they all want everyone to be better. Instead of figuring out what the differences is, they figure out what's the best thing everyone could do.
I strongly recommend that our listeners go and check it out. It's on Netflix, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I was able to find a good story. And what is really interesting about this one, and it's there's a whole bunch of sort of stories coming out of Asia that we in the last couple of weeks that we were able to find. This one is in China. Now, we don't hear much about China in terms of gay rights and so on. And in fact, all we tend to hear is the occasional good story like this. I don't know if it's because all of the negative stories don't make it to press, or if it's, you know, or if there's a gagging order. But we do tend to hear stories around this one. So there's a trans individual called Mr. Chen, and a trans man. And Mr. Chen worked in a health center. And the manager fired Mr. Chen because, and I quote, "Mr. Chen's appearance really did not fit our standards," end quote. And it was the idea that Mr. Chen was kicked out of his job for being trans. Now, Mr. Chen applied to the Guiyang Yunyang District People's Court, and they were like, yes, you should have not been fired. But they did not make the health center apologize. And they also didn't say that, yes, it was because they were trans. But rather, they were like, just pay him because you should have. And that was the end of the conversation. Well, for Mr. Chen, that wasn't quite good enough. And there's been a ruling from the Guiyang Intermediate People's Court, which is the higher court level, that found that workers should not experience deferential treatment based on their gender identity and gender expression. Now, this is huge for its potential, because what it means is that there is a court reading within the People's Court in China, one of the many, many People's Courts in China, that's essentially saying you can't discriminate based on gender identity, gender expression.
So, you know, as someone who's not from China, but who's in the general vicinity, I suppose, what do you think of China, like this precedent in the law? Would it work, do you think, in terms of establishing that Chan's rights should be protected, or at least establishing that if there's a case similar to this, we'll be able to fight it. Because to be honest, looking at this right now, first of all, there's no apology. And what it said, word by word, workers should not experience differential treatment based on gender identity or an expression, which compared to what the statement by the company said, which is Mr. Chan's appearance does not, you know, fit into the company. Those two are sort of disconnected in the sense that, yes, Mr. Chan should not have been fired, but it was not based on his gender. It was based on the appearance. Therefore, this president may not be a president at all for Supreme Court. I'm sorry to say. It's a step forward.
This court found that he had been fired for being trans and presenting as the wrong gender. I'm using air quotes here. Presenting as the wrong gender.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what was not fitting with how they believed he should have been presenting. So for me, it very much is that's why.
Well, I guess it's the ruling is still very convoluted for me. Like, should not discriminate against employee based on the basis of their gender identity. And the company stance was basically based on appearance. So it's just like the disconnect between the ruling based on their decision to fire him, and the decision that later on will be able to protect Chan's rights, because this just established that they cannot discriminate against people who does not dress appropriately for...
Yeah. Well, that's gender expression, you know? And that's what's so vitally important here, how you express your gender. And that's the grounds on which they fire them. And that's the grounds which the first time in China, a court has explicitly said you cannot do.
Again, you know, for the first time reading through this article, I was a little disappointed that no apology was obtained from the company.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Trying to parse this out in my head, wondering how difficult or, you know, what the cultural significance of an apology is. You know, there might be a different...
connotation?
Yeah, different weight to an apology. And maybe a different set of standards to, let's say, forcing somebody to apologize. But, I mean, as far as compensation goes, I think... while not ideal, number one, having validated the case through this positive ruling, is a good thing. Number two, having Mr. Chen be paid the money that he was missing, that's a good thing as well. And number three, you're right, there is now a reading somewhere in a court in China that people can refer to mm-hmm. when they look for precedent on future issues. So,
I mean, yes, I'm not saying it's not a positive move forward. I'm just saying that first of all, it's China. They're not well known for being super clear and super transparent on their human rights, especially LGBTQ issues. It's just the idea of this company not having producing an apology after losing to the court on basing on gender identity expressions means that it did not validate the transgender. Well, I think my way of thinking is that It's the same as paying instead of saying sorry.
Mm.
So that's what I'm getting at.
Right.
It feels like it's a ruling for nothing. Because yes, of course Mr. Chan shouldn't have been fired and discriminated, but that should not be, that should not just be paid by a compensation and a positive ruling, because if the opposite happens, we'll frown the other way and nothing would happen. If this happened, we'll say this is a positive move forward, but nothing actually happened except for a positive ruling that may or may not produce a precedent in the future.
Well, I think for China, this is a huge step, and I think it's a great win for trans folks in China who have some of the highest rates of suicide ideation of any trans communities. There's a study from the LGBT Center in Beijing.
Well, they get fired for their appearance.
Exactly. And, it was... And for us, we're like, this is big step for China. Well, Canada federally only introduced that changes in 2017. It's been less than a year that Canada has prevented, somebody being fired for gender expression at the federal level. So you could have been a post person and been fired for how you looked. in Canada up until last year. So we can't really throw rocks too hard because we're still on the honeymoon period of having only just passed a similar ruling here. Now, you actually brought a conversation to the table today around what's happening in the Philippines. So do you want to let us know about, I think it had to do with the sexual orientation, the gender identity and expression bill that's coming forward, the SOGI bill?
The SOGI bill, which sounds a lot better than SOGI, as
oh.
the way I've seen in my head. Lawmakers in the Philippines introduced the SOGI bill, which prevents discrimination based on the grounds of sexual orientation or gender expression. So currently the bill has passed through its third reading in one of the houses of the Congress in the Philippines. It has yet to pass through the other house, which it needs to do before it reaches the president's desk for approval.
I think that's the Senate.
Right. Yeah. So it's passed through the House of Representatives and has to go through the same process in the Senate before it gets to the...
So for our Canadian listeners, that's the sort of presidential system very similar to the States?
Yes. Yeah. So three readings in both houses, then the bill gets passed on to the president, who has final say, I think, on the passing of the bill. So yeah, no, it's the first of its kind, really. It ties together a bunch of different bills that have been introduced before into one big package. Essentially, at the heart of the bill, you have basic protections protecting LGBT groups from discrimination in terms of economic prospects, such as jobs. But also, I think, interestingly, it also seeks to protect the reputations of people who are part of the LGBT population. So you can't out people under the bill. Yeah. And you can't engage in speech that ridicules LGBT people, I think. That one's a bit more fraught, but yeah. So that's passed through the House of Representatives. And currently, as these bills tend to go in the Philippines, it's facing some resistance from Christian groups, Catholic groups, as always.
I believe that the Philippines is a very much a Catholic country.
Predominantly, yeah. 80%, yeah. I'd say, I think.
That's very Catholic.
Yeah, very, very Catholic. That's
absolutely.
And for a long time, and what we're seeing from these groups that are protesting, the attitude towards LGBT groups has been one of tolerance, but I wouldn't go so far as saying, you know, outright acceptance. The main question that these groups are raising is whether or not we actually need this bill, you know, because they apparently love, in air quotes, LGBT groups. So why do we need to introduce this new bill? The fear is that this bill will eventually be used to, in their view, impinge on
their definition of marriage. Rights.
And yeah,
exactly. But this bill is a building block to rewriting what it means for sex and gender and so on.
That's what they're worried about.
Yeah.
The gay agenda.
We saw very similar critiques of Bill C-13, so the Canadian Gender Identity, Gender Expression Bill, which I mentioned earlier. And the similarities that we saw there was that people were like, well, I mean, there's sex as a box. And, you know, if someone sued, you know, they would be able to win under that. So why do we need it spelled out under these terms? I don't know, what you're just being superfluous at this point. Although to know that you could defend under X would require a law degree. And
wow.
You know, the average person aren't experts in anti-discrimination law. They look at it and they go, well, like, I'm not on that list. Sex is for women. And it's
there's a lot of problems if you look at it under the eye of the law. Well, first of all, to put it in the most simplest way, the law is most of the time taken word by word. They are only as good as they are written. So if you, let's say you have a very vague law about, you know, killing a person, then the next time you get accused of murder and you can't argue your way out of it, and you can't interpret that law because it's so vague, it barely applies to you. That's exactly why we need this law. It's not because that we are afraid or when a it is about legitimizing, you know, LGBTQ community, but it's also about protecting us from all the things that everyone else been protected from. You know, Christian groups are religious group. I bet there are religious legislation protecting churches and there are tax exemptions and all that sort, which all ties into how you interpret the letter of the law. Now, if the letter of the law doesn't exist for LGBTQ people, how do we protect those people, even if you say that you love them? If you love them, let them have their rights.
I've always believed that the law has not only, you know, legal function, which is the main function, but also a symbolic function. And I imagine that to these groups protesting the Soji bill, the main fear is that symbolically, this law will be impinging on, you know, the power or the, you know, the status quo, the new normal. Yeah, the normal that they've so long held on to. This far, anyway. So I can imagine a bunch of that fear stems from, you know, what's going to happen in the future? Are we going to be, you know, what's going to happen to the power that we feel that we're losing?
I mean, there's definitely a fear factor in terms of how people react to legislations, particularly religious group against legislation pertaining LGBTQ groups. I think most of the time, people arguments usually revolves around beliefs and their rights, and you know, children most of the time. And at the end of the day, I kind of get where the concerns are coming from. But at the same time, like, there are tons of laws protecting other people and regulating and acknowledging different types of people of different color, of different background, of different gender. So it would be, like you said, it is symbolic as well. So it would be very unsymbolic to not include, you know, 10%, 20%, maybe even 5% of the society of their own identity. So if they're asking why or if we need this at all, I would say yes. Not just because, you know, it's something that we have just to protect us, but it's also something to make to write in history, to acknowledge that we are part of society.
I have a question for you. And the question I have is, you know, this is not the first time this bill has been introduced. It's actually, from what we're seeing here from Rappler, it's actually the third attempt at passing this similar bill. And just for our listeners, they're probably thinking, well, why is this one so important? And here's some of the elements, like, you know, preventing a child under parental authority from expressing one's gender identity or sexuality by inflicting or threatening to inflict physical harm or emotional suffering, like, you're not gay, I'll beat it out of you, will become illegal, which I think is great, you know. And it's, you know, denying access to health service because you're trans, you know, these are all things that'll be effectively outlawed in the Philippines, which I believe will actually make the Philippines one of the most progressive countries in the world when it comes to rights. Because a lot of this list of rights that the Philippines are looking to pass, you will not find in a significant number of states in the United States. And that's kind of astounding that, you know, this, the United States of America will be following behind many countries. They've fallen behind Canada. If this passes, they'll fall behind the Philippines. And
it is well known and it's proven that developing countries have more growth spurts and faster growth than developed countries, just because, you know, of the parabola effect, obviously. People, developed countries have reached the top of, in terms of society and legislation and all that sort of development. Therefore, developed countries are catching up, learning from what, you know, Canada and US have accomplished and have not accomplished. And that's, and so this Soji bill is basically Philippines trying to catch up.
Now, it's encouraging that it's gotten through the final reading, at the House of Representatives. I am worried that it won't pass the readings at the Senate, mostly because the positions of the Senate are a little less...
More conservative?
Yeah, they're a little malleable to public opinion. I think that, you know, senators are, they're voted indifferently. So they have a lot more discretion, I think, as to, you know, how they choose to vote. And you have a few very clearly anti-LGBT senators, including Manny Pacquiao, I believe. So whether or not this bill passes depends on how well it reads in the Senate as well. Mm. I don't doubt that. I imagine that it should be fine at the presidential level. While Duterte can be a bit of a...
radical?
Yeah.
I think he's currently under investigation by the International Criminal Court as well.
So yeah, that's... yeah.
The guy is interesting. But I remember he did say that he's not technically against LGBTQ people, but he's against the implication of it, I suppose.
Well, he's actually, as far as I know, his campaign was fairly pro-LGBT. He very early on established that marriage equality would be, you know, not, you know, wouldn't be an issue for him. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm not really worried about it getting... I'm not really worried about the president getting the bill. I'm worried about it passing through the final reading of the Senate.
Well, I think what Christian advocates have found, and not just... I need to rephrase that. It's anti-equality advocates who are affiliated with various Christian groups, just to clarify that. What they found is that very often it's through bills such as this that creates the legal... elbow room to pass marriage equality mm-hmm. laws and pass other laws similar to that. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's that kind of, there's a clear path to equality, and you know, now that they know the route it's taken in countries like Canada and other countries, that they're putting up those roadblocks. Now, we've run out of time and for today's show. Now, there was other news from like Malaysia and Indonesia, which wasn't great news. There was no happy news out of Malaysia or Indonesia. So we're going to just, if you want to get depressed, then just Google gay rights in Malaysia and Indonesia, and then that'll keep you busy for an hour or two. But we don't have time to cover it on this week's show. Thank you so much for joining me this week, Josh and Jake. And we'll be back next week on Can Queer.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Put myself on the line.